It is my pleasure, I think we have her on the phone. Rita, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
I hope it's your pleasure.
It was my... Well, I don't know, Rita. I must tell you, it's not always the case where if I adore a book, as I did your first novel, The 14th of September, that does not necessarily mean that I will adore the interview, but you sound very nice and you are obviously a terribly talented writer. After a life as a public relations executive, it seems to me from reading some of your biographical information that you have always wanted to be a creative writer. Is that true, or am I making too much of that?
Oh, no, that's absolutely true. From way back when, I mean, I didn't write short stories as an infant or anything like many of the, like Victor Hugo or anyone like that.
Right.
But I have to say that I had a very creative imagination. I used to call it daydreaming, and I would read a lot, and then I would write myself parts into books.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, so like, for example, the Thomas Castaigne Plantagenet novel,
mm-hmm.
all now have a little girl that has a blue or purple veil with one of those little crowns, you know.
And charming.
I did that for Egypt, I did it for all kinds of things, and then didn't actually start writing them down until closer to junior high.
One of the things, though, obviously you're not, you wrote in junior high, then you probably wrote in high school, and you might have written in college, too, but then you took a different course. You did not start to devote yourself, maybe it's because you didn't discover Ragdale until later in life, but you got into a different kind of form of writing. I've known a number of people in the public relations industry for many, many years, and there's a lot of writing that takes place in public relations. It is so vastly different than creative writing. Not that it's not creative. I am not saying that at all, because it is, in its fashion, terribly creative, but it's so vastly different from the unencumbered way in which you can go about writing a novel. Am I sound like an idiot, Rita, or not?
No, we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
I have to say that despite the fact that I always wanted to write creatively, I also had a mother who was very clear on the fact that I was going to have to make a living and eat while I was doing it.
Yes.
And I had no illusions about the fact that even though I considered writing my avocation, you know, that ultimately I would get to that.
Sure.
PR, as you know, is a writing career.
No question.
You get into it. What I did is, particularly when I got to a very major PR agency, I found what it was like to be creative in community. So brainstorming, coming up with ideas, didn't have to be an entire story. It could be campaign. And that was very satisfying for a while. And then, ironically, I found out that I was really good at the business side, you know, this thing called strategy. I had
sure.
no idea what it was. And so the higher you go, the less you write.
True.
And so, but, you know, again, it's busy and writing takes a tremendous amount of time, so it was always on the back burner. And then about, 15 years ago, I'd been at major agencies, I sold my agency, and then I decided, okay, this is when I'm going to write this story that I had in my mind. It was queued up for all these years. And I started another business, a consulting business, and they were both going to be part-time. Don't
oh, sure
ever
they were,
start
yeah.
a business and a book at the same time.
I can only imagine.
Because that's where Ragdale came in. I wrote most of my book at Ragdale.
We're talking about Ragdale, the sort of writer's colony in Lake Forest that has been a salvation for all manner of writers. To give them peace and quiet, and also the chance to talk to other writers in a lovely, lovely setting. Rita Dragonet is the author of what I must say is a fantastic novel. It is hard to believe that this is your first novel. It was hard for our mutual friend Patricia Ann McNair to believe that, and Patrick Reardon, my former colleague at the Chicago Tribune. There was a ton of advance praise for this book. Was there, though, Rita Dragonette? I'm curious. I want to read a little something from the book after we have tried to describe what it's about, because I love your writing. Was there a sense of urgency to this next career in your life? You know what I mean? I mean,
right. Well, what I did was I feel like I spent about three quarters of my life either experiencing the activities that were in the book, thinking about writing it, and marketing it. But there was an urgency after I sold my agency when I actually got into it. I started taking classes at the Graham School. I started to get involved in Ragdale. I took everything I had learned in PR because I knew that I couldn't spend as long becoming a good writer as I had becoming a good PR person, or I wouldn't live that long.
Sure.
I mean, I'd be Michelangelo. I'd be, 225 years old, and maybe I'd be in my second novel. So, as you said, Ragdale taught me process. University of Chicago got me into workshops. It just allowed me to deal with experts and not waste time.
Yeah, good. That's a great.
But I had to teach myself how to write creatively because I hadn't had training in it. I'd taken creative writing classes in college, but when I was in college, they weren't as sophisticated as they are now. You'd just bring something into workshop and people would tear it apart, and if you survived,
Exactly. If you survived, you walked out and said, I'm never doing that again.
Exactly. Certainly never talking to those people again.
Yes, I never want to see those people. Oh, boy, have I heard those stories. Patricia Ann McNair, who is one of this area's most talented writers, had
She's
this
wonderful.
To say, and a nice person, too, had this to say about the 14th of September. Quote, this debut novel deftly captures a generation on the cusp of an uncertain future. The characters' choices are difficult, their solutions complex. At times charming and funny, at others intense and heartbreaking, Dragonette depicts a complicated chapter in our history with precision and depth and renders it with compassion, understanding, and grace. One of the things I love about your book is the title of your book, because I, being part of the, I don't want to keep people in suspense about what it is, there was a lottery for those of you of a certain age on December 1st in 1969, on which numbered, I think they were blue-colored balls.
They were blue.
Yeah, at least I'm not senile yet. Thank you, Rita. They were picked with dates of the year, and it was in the order in which young men in this country would be drafted. September 14th was number one.
Yes.
I was lucky enough to be born in 1952, so July of 1970 when those numbers were picked. My number was 238, corresponding to September 13th. What so intrigued me about this, about your novel, the Rita Dragonette, is that it stars, for lack of a better word, a woman, interesting, complicated, fascinating, forthright, but also burdened kind of woman. I'm fascinated with Judy Talton's mom too, even though she is not a huge character in the book.
She looms.
She sure does. when you first meet her in that early flashback to, sort of what. What was expected of women going to college in those days? What small career paths were open to them? How much, and no, this is a stupid question, how much of Rita is you?
Well, that is the first question that everyone asks. So it's not stupid, it's natural curiosity. And I would say that the structure of Judy's dilemma is something that is similar to what I went through. But I never intended it to be closely autobiographical. As a matter of fact, I had a writing teacher at University of Chicago, and I went to him one day and I said, I need a dilemma for Judy that's every bit as has the gravitas of something I went through. What can I possibly do? And he looked at me like I had two heads, and he said, you're a writer. This is your material. Use it. So that gave me permission.
Permission, sure.
But I definitely, I lived through those times, and that is why I felt like it was so important to write it from a woman's point of view.
Yeah.
If you think about it, there are very, very few books from a female point of view in Vietnam, if you can think of any.
Oh, I can't.
I mean, I don't want to say it absolute.
No, but I have read, and this is so my era too, and I cannot think of any, and that's what just kept me glued to the pages. I want to take a little break and come back and read just a couple paragraphs chosen almost at random from Rita Dragonette's book, and then we'll talk a little more about the arduous nature of marketing one's own work in this idiotic, strange publishing age. We will be right back. I'll tell you, the Steve Cochran Show has free Blackhawk tickets for you tomorrow morning at 7:50, so be listening. We'll be right back. The protagonist of Rita Dragonette's first novel, first of what I hope will be a series of novels, is titled The 14th of September, is named Judy Talton, and she is, in a sense, caught between two words. Rita, can I read a paragraph or two? Would you mind?
Absolutely.
And this is just a random paragraph, because music is a big part of this book. But this is really kind of at random, because I am a child of this time, too, and I was just taken with, here. Her new life was exciting, but it took up most of her time. She certainly couldn't risk her grades, or she would lose her scholarship. When she wasn't with her new friends until 3 a.m, when the tune room closed, she was invited night after night as they assembled in one dorm room or another, supposedly to study, but they always ended up just lying around on the bunks or on the floor listening to music. The guys, other than Will, would dig deep into the albums. Not the lyrics, which she thought, was the best part, but the riffs. They would imitate Eric Clapton or Led Zeppelin's Robert Plant by seeing how fast they could play their imaginary guitars, often down the spine of whatever girl was lying next to them. Judy tried to get as interested in the music as they were, but to do that she needed to be high, and she couldn't keep up both sides of her life if she was wasted every night. She started to smoke cigarettes so it wouldn't be so obvious that she was passing on most of the joints going around. Then, quote, it's more important to experience life, not books, Achilles would say of an evening. To hear this effing incredible music, I mean, come together, what else needs to be said? That's what's real, man. There can be no war if we think like that. That's so captured an era for me. I know that guy. I know that
yourself,
scene. And it's just, it's really, really, really good writing. You sound incredibly smart and sensitive, Rita Dragonette. There must be an incredibly empowering feeling having this book between covers, because this book was between the synapses of your brain for decades, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, 3/4 of my life. Yeah. I weighed that out. Yeah. It was something that was not only what I wanted to talk about, but it was something that I really felt like I had to.
Yeah.
Because having gone through that time, as you did, we're contemporaries.
Yep.
I did feel, and I think you can remember the day, is that the women, particularly on the campus, which is where the majority of draft-age men were.
Sure.
The women were right with the men.
Yep.
We called them guys. The girls and the guys were together, but the women didn't always have the standing or the stature. And
no, you were very much, very much, very much a part. I remember hauntingly the the young woman on her knees screaming in the air, the obviously the most famous photo from the Kent State.
Right.
Yeah, but that was it. I mean, otherwise it was a sort of male-centric kind of scene. Ooh, I got this draft number. Ooh, I got this draft number. And women were... It was an incredible time for women, I think, and I don't want to get into the whole feminism.
Well, it was early feminism.
Yeah, there's
that scene on lottery night that really just tells what it was like to be every bit as worried, but not even be able to be in the room.
Yeah, yeah, and not really be able to express that worry and express
right.
that thing. I can't tell you. You have a lovely. You also have a very well. As an old PR pro, you have a very, very, very nice website, Rita Dragonette, RitaDragonette.com, and you have a lot of events coming up, some private, some not. How's the marketing? I've never talked to a successful public relations executive who has written an extraordinarily good novel to ask, how's the marketing aspect of this for you? Enjoyable or no?
Well, you know, I thought it would be more fun.
Yeah, I bet.
It isn't quite... It's very intense. In the beginning, it was a lot more arduous than it is. Now I'm having a great deal of fun with it. But it is an amazing thing, Rick, because what you're doing is you spend most of your time in PR telling clients or advising clients
yeah.
on what they should be doing. And they usually accept somewhere between 60 and 75% of
mm-hmm.
what you say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're doing your own marketing... You do 100% of what you think is the right thing to do. And you also know how to do, I think where it's a little different is most writers don't like marketing.
Yeah.
They think it's, you know,
yeah.
that it's uncomfortable for them. And I have been waiting all these years to be able to come out and talk about this book.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And I understand what a campaign is, you know, so it's you can't just do one thing or two things. You have to do many, many, many layers of things. And particularly in this social media environment,
ugh.
It's just...
Driving me crazy, frankly.
Well, you know...
I know, but it's necessary. Yeah, It's not so much a necessary evil. It really is a necessary chore.
It's a phenomenal way to actually market a book, and it's so much easier than it used to be.
Yeah.
But by the same token, traditional media, you know, has shrunk so much.
Well, I mean, look at the books. You know, of course. I mean, there are no books, as far as I know. There are very few programs that on TV and or radio that are devoted to books. Book sections of major newspapers have shrunk and disappeared. It's tough. It's tough out there. You are talking about doing one or two or three or many things at once. You're currently, I love this line on your website. She is currently working on three additional books. I love that line. And one is a sort of homage to one of my favorite novels, even though he was a sexist kind of goof. He could still write. The Sun Also Rises, a World War II novel based upon your interest in that, and a memoir and essays. I'm interested in all of them, of course, Rita Dragonette. I'm particularly interested in the memoir.
Oh, the memoir and essays?
Yeah.
Well, it is a, and actually, you know who inspired me to think about that was Patricia McNair.
Oh, how nice.
But the memoir, the title essay in the memoir and the title of the book itself is going to be called, and here's another thing, it'll go back to our shared childhood, Violating the Prime Directive. So remember your Star Trek?
Oh, yes.
I just always thought that was just such a beautiful phrase. So that particular essay is about being childless, so you can see how appropriate that is.
Yeah.
But rather than a memoir cover to cover, furniture moving every single step, it's like, what is these episodic epiphanies that are universal in things that I have gone through, that I I am working on in between these other two.
Sure.
And the reason there are so many things keyed up, I know it sounds like, oh, come on.
I like it. Stop that.
But I have been, you know, being the perfectionist PR person that I always was, I was like, I have to finish 14th of September before I can work on anything else.
Good for you.
And that, decades doing it. And sometimes it was like homework.
Yeah, I bet. Sure.
And this time I want to be able to go back and forth. I mean, the Sun Also Rises one is actually a contemporary novel.
Oh, I think that's... Well, I will be the first in line at whatever bookstore you are signing those. Rita Dragonette, it is a pleasure to meet you over the telephone. It is a real, distinct, and memorable pleasure to have read the 14th of September. Thank you.
Well, I'm thrilled, and I hope I was as adorable live as I was on the pages.
More so. Thank you, dear. Happy holidays and all that jazz. Keep writing. Don't let the holidays get in the way of your writing. It was a real pleasure. The 14th of September is a great novel.